You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Castro-Prince. This is our latest look at the Cleveland Indians, and I am joined by Jordan Bastian, and we are previewing spring training camp. It opens next week in Goodyear, Arizona. And, JB, you've got a string of stories going up on Indians.com over the course of this week. I figure we just kind of run through the categories there for each of those stories and the exciting lead-up to the day that pitchers and catchers report. Let's start with just the difference between the 2016 club and the 2017 club. This club obviously had great success in 2016, ran away with the AL Central, and then went on that stunning run through October right up to Game 7 of the World Series. But how will this club be different in 2017?
Well, I think the biggest difference that fans will see with the 2017 Indians lies within one of the biggest difference makers that any team acquired over this offseason. When the Indians acquired Edwin Encarnacion, you know, it was really the perfect fit for the need that they entered in, you know, the offseason with. They had a great need for power for the middle of the lineup with Mike Napoli hitting free agency, and many thought that the Indians were just going to re-sign Mike Napoli. But, you know, as the market developed, it became more clear that the Indians were going to be a realistic player for Encarnacion, and he fit perfectly what they needed. They needed that right-handed power right in the middle, and he's a guy that produces power on a more consistent level, and he's in a kind of an elite slugger in that he doesn't strike out a ton, you know, while producing that power. You know, so once he was able to fall to the Indians' price range where they could realistically make it work, he just fit very perfectly. You know, Mike Napoli will be missed in the clubhouse, in the lineup. Fans will miss him. You know, the party at Napoli's mantra became a rallying cry among fans. Did a lot of work for charity in Cleveland in his 1 year stint there. But when you have an opportunity to get a difference maker like Encarnacion, and when you're a team like the Indians who have this window right in front of them to contend for a World Series, you have to do it, and that's exactly what they did.
You know, one of the great things about spring training is when guys kind of step up unexpectedly. The Indians last spring, had various issues come up in the outfield. You know, Michael Brantley's continued struggles with the shoulder, and Abraham Almonte was banged for PEDs. Tyler Naquin was a really pleasant surprise for them, and wound up seeing, obviously, a lot of time in the big leagues in 2016, wound up finishing third in the Rookie of the Year vote. As you look ahead to the camp in 2017, any guys kind of jump out at you as potential to surprise, be it a guy making the club unexpectedly or maybe somebody having a more pronounced role than expected?
Yeah, so I think that Roberto Perez could really open some eyes this spring and maybe convince the Indians to increase the number of innings that he has behind the plate. You know, I don't think it's going to be a big surprise if he's a guy that gets more playing time. But with a strong spring, you know, he might position himself where throughout the 2017 season, maybe he could earn more innings or eventually maybe even supplant Yan Gomes as the starter behind the plate. You know, we saw Yan Gomes in 2013 enter in as the backup to Carlos Santana back when Santana was catching. And by the second half, Gomes had earned that starting role, you know, and then earned himself an extension. But given the way his offense has declined over the last couple of years and given the way, you know, some of his health woes have opened the door for Roberto Perez, Perez has really showed the Indians that he can be more than a backup. So I think Terry Francona's kind of hinted that Gomes is going to be the starter, but there is an opportunity to maybe work Roberto Perez in more, whether it's having one guy in the lineup as a DH on occasion or working in extra days off for Yan Gomes. But given the way that both guys struggled with injuries and with offense last year, but both bring plus defense, I think they're really going to monitor both guys closely this spring and through the first half to determine who would be the best option to behind the plate as the number one catcher.
A good problem to have is when it's hard to identify a team's star, not because it's hard to find one, but because there's several guys who qualify. You don't get to the World Series without that situation. So the Indians have several guys who would probably qualify as the star. I'm curious, who is your pick for the star of this club, and what is that person's situation heading into spring training?
Yeah, I think the star right now, just in terms of also being a star for the face of his country and also for the face of baseball potentially, is Francisco Lindor. I mean, this guy really has emerged, you know, ever since he's been up in the big leagues. All the Indians have done is win, you know, and I think he's an emerging star, not just on the Cleveland stage, but for Major League Baseball. You know, when we spoke to Commissioner Rob Manfred at the press conference to announce that the Indians were getting the All-Star game in 2019, you know, he spoke about Francisco Lindor and the work that he's done charity-wise through the RBI program, you know, around not just Cleveland but around the country on various stops. So this is a young player who's emerging and becoming one of the faces of baseball, and he's going to play for Puerto Rico. He takes a lot of pride in that, in the World Baseball Classic. He played in the All-Star game last year, won a gold glove, won a platinum glove, and he's a guy that is entrenched as the starter at shortstop for not just 2017, but for many, many years to come for the Cleveland Indians.
JB, what would you say is the vision for the Indians here, the big picture plan? I mean, obviously we know the goal is to win the World Series. Just as far as how they go about that, you know, sometimes it can be difficult to repeat in this game, as the Indians are trying to do in the American League. But how do you sum up the vision for this year?
I mean, they're all in to win now. I think that's the vision for 2017 and also for, you know, 2018, 2019, 2020. When you look at the way the core is locked in, you know, how many years manager Terry Francona is locked in, kind of the way they've structured this team. I think the trade for Andrew Miller in 2016, where they gave up four prospects, and also the signing of Encarnacion, which kind of went against the grain of what we're used to seeing for the Cleveland Indians. Those were two very clear signs that this team sees its window, and sees its window is right now, and they need to maximize their chances for contending. You know, they reached the World Series last year with a depleted pitching staff. You know, they're coming into this spring healthy, potentially with Michael Brantley back, now with Encarnacion, with an Andrew Miller anchored bullpen. The vision is to win the World Series right now.
Yeah, that's obviously the end goal. They hope the end result. And so I know the answer to this next question, but we're doing a series here on what does the perfect season look like for every club. And we know for the Indians, that would, of course, involve getting back to the World Series and this time coming up with it and ending what is now the longest championship drought in the game, going back to 1948. But within that context, JB, what are some things that would have to happen over the course of 2017 to qualify as that perfect season?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, the perfect season for the Indians would be to win one more game than they did in 2016. You know, they pushed the Cubs to the limit, extra innings, game seven, one of the most memorable World Series finales, you know, of our lifetime and in baseball history. And yeah, I think if you were going to say what's the perfect season this year beyond that, developments would be Michael Brantley returning to form. You know, they don't want to go through another year where, you know, they're, you know, starting and stopping with a rehab program and seeing his comeback stall. They want to see him back in the heart of that lineup, being the force and MVP candidate that he was a few years ago. You know, another element of a perfect season for this team would be avoiding disastrous injuries. You know, down the stretch last year, Carlos Carrasco, Danny Salazar were, you know, out of the rotation, and we saw how that hindered the Indians throughout the postseason. They were able to work around it and get to the World Series in spite of the issues, but they were really handicapped along the way. So I think avoiding some of those huge injuries, getting Michael Brantley back, and then obviously winning one more game than they did in 2016, that would be the perfect season for the Cleveland Indians.
You know, when you go into spring training, what you don't want to have is competition all over the place. Competition can bring out the best in people, but when you have it at multiple positions, sometimes that's an uncomfortable position going into season. Obviously, the Indians are in pretty decent shape up and down the roster. They've shored up things pretty well here this winter, be it in the lineup with Encarnacion, in the bullpen with Boone Logan. But, you know, when you look at this club's roster, what are some of the you know, key positions or areas of interest and intrigue over the course of the next 6-7 weeks of spring training camp?
Yeah, the result of being such a strong roster is that there's minimal competition. And as spring opens, you know, before we see what potential health setbacks or anything might prop up over the course of spring, main competition will be for the last spot in the bullpen and the last spot on the bench. You know, that's the sign of a really strong team. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that bench spot. Utility role for a Terry Francona roster is very, very important. You know, a young guy like Eric Gonzalez comes to mind, who can play multiple infield positions, or another young guy like Yandy Diaz. Maybe in the outfield, you know, they could look at Abraham Almonte versus non-roster invitee Austin Jackson. You know, for the bullpen, there's a slew of arms in the mix. You know, you could go for a high strikeout guy like Sean Armstrong, who's really lit it up in the minor leagues but hasn't really established himself too much yet in the big league stage. Or do they take Cody Anderson or Mike Clevenger, guys who really give the starting rotation some depth but who showed a knack for having success as relievers and multi-inning relievers down the stretch for the Indians last year. So those are really going to be the main areas of competition, and things could change if there's any setbacks with Michael Brantley for the makeup of that outfield. But as of right now, if you assume he's the left fielder, the last spot on the bench, last spot on the bullpen, really the two only areas of competition.
Last thing, JB, kind of take us into that clubhouse, what you expect it to be like as guys filter into camp. Of course, many of them report early, but, you know, spring training's a great bonding time. You know, like Edwin Encarnacion has said, he won't participate in the World Baseball Classic because he wants to get to know his new teammates and these guys coming off the success they had in 2016. It's going to be a great atmosphere, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, when I was standing in the clubhouse after Game 7, I remember Cody Allen talking to us, looking at the clock and saying, it's only been 45 minutes and I'm ready to get to Arizona and get this thing started again. So from minutes after Game 7 ended, this team was itching to get rolling again. And I think that's the atmosphere and the feeling that we're going to have when we arrive in Goodyear, Arizona, for this team that's going to enter 2017 as heavy favorites in the American League. So, you know, the way that last season ended, I think that feeling of wanting to get started probably came a lot sooner than it typically does for a team in the off-season months. There's definitely a heavy sense of unfinished business for this team, and for the most part, it's a team that has come up together. Guys who were young and inexperienced are now growing into veteran leaders within that clubhouse. It's going to be definitely an exciting spring to monitor the Indians.
All right, there you have it, the latest from Jordan Bastian. He will be down there in Goodyear, Arizona, so be sure to follow his work on Indians.com. He's going to bring that fancy camera of his and give us all kinds of great pictures of PFPs in the early days of camp. We love that, and we'll continue to check with him throughout spring training camp and, of course, throughout the 2017 season. So thanks for joining us. This has been MLB.com Extras, Cleveland Indians edition. Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and this is our latest look at the Chicago White Sox. I'm joined by Scott Merkin, and we are going to preview spring training. Merk is soon to be standing on a corner in Glendale, Arizona, watching the White Sox go by. Is that how it works, Merk? Let's start with the difference between 2016 White Sox and 2017 White Sox. It's a pretty loaded topic because obviously there's some big differences here. Obviously a major overhaul this winter.
Yeah, I wonder what that could be. It's quite a bit, like you said, it's a night and day for the White Sox, and that, you know, last year they were still going for it. They had acquired Todd Frazier. They'd acquired Brett Laurie in trades. You know, they tried to kind of piece things together as spring training moved along, adding Matt Latos before spring training, Jimmy Rollins at shortstop during spring training. And this year they have gone a different direction and they've kind of picked a decisive path and that they are rebuilding. Gaughan is one of the best pitchers in baseball and, in my opinion, one of the better teammates too. And Chris Sale, and another, you know, good person and good two-way defense offensive player in Adam Eaton. And in return is a prospect hall of seven players, including Yoan Moncada, Michael Kopech, Lucas Giolito, Ronaldo Lopez, you know, the list goes on. So they are going in, you know, this is the new direction. This is the decisive direction they're going in. They are a rebuilding team. And it, you know, this could be, if we do this podcast this time next year, it may be the same theme. You know, this could be a plan that takes at least 2 years, I would think, maybe three, to get everything together and get the right pieces in place. And people seem to be excited about it. People seem to be excited, especially, you know, I think the excitement grows with what they got in return for, albeit two excellent players.
Who do you think might be the surprise of this spring training camp for the White Sox? A guy who maybe cracks the roster unexpectedly or maybe grows into a bigger role than expected?
Well, you know, I don't know there are that many surprises because a guy like Moncada, you know, they're expecting him to be good. Let's use Moncada and Giolito as examples. They probably don't start the season in the big leagues, but they probably will be there sooner than later. So there aren't a lot of guys, I think, you know, that people don't know. But I would say one guy I would point to is Matt Davidson, who I've written about a couple times in the offseason. You know, Matt's had a 10-year full of struggles with the White Sox. And then going into the 2016 season, say that 10 times fast, kind of rebuilt his swing and had a great spring training, had a rough April, but got things back together, you know, mentally and focused, and played great for Charlotte, hit the ball well in both May and June, and got a call up to the majors. And then in one game broke his foot, and that was that. But I talked to him at Sox Fest, and he also said that he made some further tweaks in his swing after the injury and feels in a better position to pull baseballs that, you know, he was maybe flying out to left center or flying out to center on. So I really think if there's some way he ends up getting 300, 350, you know, I don't know if he's going to get more than that, at bats in some combination between third and DH, then he could be a 20-home run guy. I think he really is primed to take off as the power hitter that they thought they were getting when they got him from Arizona in return for Addison Reed.
So Chris Sale is gone. Hate to break that news to anybody listening to this who wasn't aware, but Chris Sale is gone to the Red Sox. Who is the star of the White Sox going into 2017, and what is that star situation for the spring trading and the season ahead?
Well, I think, you know, the star has got to be, I don't know if you would agree or disagree, but it's got to be Jose Abreu. You know, I mean, it's you have other, which is the different thing about this rebuild versus the Cubs and Houston and Milwaukee and Philadelphia and Atlanta, is that you have quite a few veteran players on this team still, and Frazier and Laurie and, you know, Quintana is still there as we tape this, and Melky Cabrera, David Robertson in the bullpen. So it's a little different than other rebuilds, but I still think if you pick the one guy who's kind of the cornerstone of the franchise, and that's Jose Abreu. And, you know, Jose had kind of an odd season last year in that his numbers at the end were just as good as his first two great years. You know, he was a rookie of the year his first year and had, you know, just three great years. And it just was kind of inconsistent. You know, he had a month last year, we didn't hit a home run the entire month. So he had some, you know, some personal issues going on in terms of he saw his son in December and then kind of had to leave him behind. And that kind of did leave him behind in Cuba. And then, you know, he was figuring out how to get him here more frequently, which he did. And Jose kind of played that down and said, hey, he just, you know, struggled. He struggled at times and that was it. Kind of expanded the zone a little bit. But, I think they still have three more, well, this year and two more years after that. And, you know, the interesting thing will be where will he be when they're ready to contend? Will they be able to contend that last year of his deal? Well, he's opted into arbitration, so the last year of arbitration that they have with him. Will they try and extend him longer, or will he be part of the, you know, the trades that they go through? I mean, he still looks good. You know, he's a decent first baseman. He's an excellent hitter. He's, you know, a guy who not only is just a power hitter, but hits for average. So he's the guy you kind of focus on right now, basically because, you know, he's that good. And other guys are just kind of too young to assume that mantle quite yet.
Obviously, there will be a lot of new bodies, new faces in that White Sox clubhouse this spring. How do you describe just the vision for this spring training and for this season, the goal of Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams and the White Sox in general?
Well, you know, I don't know if you – I think the best thing you can say about the vision is it's so early on in this process is that they're just looking for high-end prospects. Now, it's skewed towards pitching. I think what it's five of the seven guys in the Sale and Eaton trades they acquired were pitchers with Basabe, an outfielder, and Moncada, right now an infielder. So I don't think it's designed that they're trying to get, you know, 20 pitchers and three position players in this deal. I think it never hurts to have too much pitching, obviously, and you can end up moving some of these guys, as Rick Hahn mentioned, at Soxfest. You know, some of these guys will be part of further packages as they move on in the rebuild and, you know, develop the team even more towards contention. So I think it's just they're looking for kind of high-end prospects, kind of versatile guys. They have guys who look like they could, you know, start and relieve, and some of the, you know, a guy like Lopez could probably help the team out either way. You know, and that's adding on to the mix they already have from their recent international signings and an excellent 2016 amateur draft class. But, yeah, I would think, yeah, there's not a clear, like, we're going for pitching, we're going for vision players. I think they're going for the best talent. And in the process, they've acquired some, you know, some versatile guys who can help them in a number of different ways.
Obviously, the, you know, contention effort for 2017 is less than earnest. I think we'll put it that way.
Right.
White Sox not expecting to be contenders in AL Central this season. But what does the perfect season look like in 2017?
Well, I think the perfect season has been kind of illuminated by Rick Renteria, you know, the new manager, and Rick Hahn, the general manager, and that, you know, doing things the right way. Now, that's of course not to say that, you know, under the last 5 years, Robin Ventura, or the years before that with Ozzie Guillen, they didn't do it the right way. But I think with younger players, it's even more important, you know, with the predominance of younger players who are going to be dotted throughout that lineup, just playing hard, you know, trying to avoid mistakes and development. That's the biggest thing. Now they want to win. You know, they're not, their goal does not seem to be to lose, you know, 100 games and the quote unquote tank process as part of the rebuild. They want to play the best they can, but I think it's more about development. So if, you know, Moncada comes up in June and Zach Birdie, who's maybe the closer of the future for the White Sox, comes up in May, you know, you don't necessarily have to see a 1.50 ERA from Birdie or a 3.30 average from Moncada. But you want to see these guys getting better as the years go on, as the year goes on, and years go on, obviously, too, but this year in particular. So, again, like you said, I don't think there's even probably, even with the team they have right now, which is, you know, still pretty veteran-laden, I don't think there's a huge thought about them even like sneaking in as a second wild card right now. As Rick Hahn pointed out, you know, they were an under 500 team with Sale and Eaton. So take those two guys away and you're going to drop even more. But I think it's just all about development, doing things right, and just, you know, continuing that step down the path to rebuild, which they hope will lead to years of sustained contention.
Well, like you said, they don't want to totally tank here in the new year. So who are the straws that stir the drink? I mean, who are the core players who are going to dictate, you know, how successful this season is in the one loss column?
Well, it's kind of hard to say because, you know, as I say that about, you know, that they have a veteran core, I guess I'm kind of overlooking the obvious that a lot of these guys could be gone by August 1st. You know, I mean, David Robertson is a solid closer, a guy who could work as a closer and probably a strong setup guy for a contending team. You know, he could be a chip on the market. Todd Frazier, great clubhouse guy, good power hitter, very solid defensively. I know the metrics didn't maybe always agree with that last year, but I thought just watching him had a very good year defensively. Melky Cabrera, even Jose Abreu, and then, of course, Jose Quintana, who's, you know, one of the better pitchers in the American League, one of the more consistent pitchers. So those are all guys who kind of stir the drink, as you said, but also guys who could be moved in the process too. You know, I think the biggest thing when you're doing this rebuild and when you're amassing a critical mass, as Rick Hahn called it, is you need a large group to pick from. You know, I mean, Jerry Reinsdorf said this to another media outlet back at the winter meetings, that, you know, if you get 12, 14 guys, maybe two or three really pan out. So it's not like you can just get like five or six and say, well, there they are, they got to all work. You got to keep moving in that direction. So it'll be interesting to see who draws interest and so forth, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, I think Jose Abreu is a guy who probably is going to be here for the 2017 campaign. He's kind of a guy that's a leader. You know, they have a lot of good young, the young players seem to fit well together just from the little I've seen of them. So the veterans will help at the beginning. It's just a question of how long, you know, each one stays and if some make it through the entire 2017 season.
Last thing, Merk, what would be just the key points of interest for spring training specifically for this club? What are some of the key points of interest as they arrive at camp?
Well, I think you're going to see some guys. Well, I think, you know, one of the biggest points of interest is Jose Quintana your opening day starter? If he is on the team, he is the opening day starter. There's no question about that. But does he somehow get traded before they arrive in Arizona or before they break camp, go to Milwaukee for the exhibition games, and then come home to start the season? And, you know, if he doesn't, how does he handle kind of the, you know, the one eye on the trade market and the one eye on pitching for the White Sox? How does Carlos Rodon, you know, take that next step? He's each of his first 2 years in the majors, the first year was kind of a partial year. I think he had 25 games, 23 starts, something along those lines, and then a full year as a starter last year. He finished very strong, but now he's, you know, and he's still so young, but now he's trying to carry it on to the next level. Carson Fulmer, you know, had kind of a rough debut, albeit rushed a little bit in a situation in relief that he's not used to. How does he bounce back? And just, you know, looking at some of these younger guys, it's all going to be about the younger guys, and a lot of them are going to be in camp. You know, Zach Collins, Kopech, Birdie, I'm missing guys, Moncada, of course, Giolito, you know, Lopez. All these guys fans will get a look at. And how about another guy, you know, who I could mention is kind of a quiet leader, too, and Tim Anderson, who's only in his second year, really his first full year, but, you know, had a great rookie season. And how does he, you know, develop in the next level there? So, again, just like I said about the vision, you know, about the perfect season, about development, that's what people are going to be looking at kind of in spring training. And how do these guys look, albeit in a small sample size, you know, to take to the next step?
All right. There you have it. The latest from Scott Merkin. We'll continue to check in with him throughout spring training camp in Glendale, Arizona. I want to thank him for joining us. Thank you all for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extra, Chicago White Sox edition. Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and this is our latest look at the Detroit Tigers. I'm joined by Jason Beck, and we are previewing spring training in Lakeland, Florida. The Tigers report to camp next week, and Beck will be all over it for MLB.com. I want to ask you, Jason, looking the difference basically between 2016 and 2017. I mean, the roster is not fundamentally all that different. What do you think the difference is going to be in this club here in spring training and moving forward?
I think the difference is going to have to be health. And, you know, granted, it's a optimistic viewpoint at this point, you know, because we haven't even thrown a bullpen session yet. But really what Tigers hopes are riding on, given the situation, is that guys like Jordan Zimmermann can give them closer to a full season, that you don't lose J.D. Martinez for a critical portion of the year with his arm injury, that you don't lose Nick Castellanos down the stretch. In some ways, I always thought one thing that went overlooked with the Tigers during that run of success that they had, the run of division titles, was that by and large they stayed relatively healthy. Now, granted, they had some big injuries from time to time. Victor Martinez's lost 2012 season, foremost among them, but they were able to overcome that by signing a guy like Prince Fielder. This team doesn't have that flexibility either financially or in terms of prospects. So, the guys they're paying are guys they need to produce. And I think that goes especially for guys like Zimmerman to try to add that veteran frontline presence to the rotation, kind of help fill it out. And also to guys like Martinez and Castellanos. And even Victor Martinez, as it turns out, we didn't know it until the other day when Al Avila said it, but he was playing through a hernia for the stretch run, which I'm sure affected him. So I think when you add that all together, they need to get that injury rate back down to a little bit more normal levels for them to have a chance.
When you look at the 40-man and the non-roster invites, anybody who jumps out at you as a potential surprise in this spring training camp, by that I mean a guy who might grab a job he wasn't expected to, or maybe even jump into a more of a pronounced role than was expected?
Well, it's going to be, Daniel Norris is the guy I think has a chance to really step up. But you look at his spot, and unless something crazy happens, you'd expect him to make the team. I guess if you're going to look at somebody who has a chance to sneak up and take a spot, you might look at Joe Jimenez. I know we talked a lot about him last year as a guy on the cusp of the big leagues and the guy who has a chance to make an impact whenever he gets here. Ideally, they'd like to get him a little bit more development time in Toledo. But if he shows enough in spring training, it wouldn't completely shock me if he made the bullpen, if they could find a meaningful role for him. This is a team that took Joel Zamaya in a relief role out of camp, despite very limited bullpen time way back in 06. And I think you can find some of the same front office people, same talent evaluators who'd be willing to do it again. But then again, it might not be right away even. It might be early in the season, might be mid-season. But with that fastball and with the potential that he has, if he can develop that slider for a secondary pitch, he's got a chance to make a pretty big impact on this team, especially in an area where they could use some more talent.
Obviously, the Tigers are still not short on star power. Guys are getting up there in years, but they've maintained that star group. Who do you identify as kind of the signature star of this club and maybe assess that guy's outlook going into the year?
Well, I mean, it's got to be Cabrera, I think. You can make an argument for Verlander, but I still think given his place in history, Cabrera really is the star here. And he's, we're just about at that point now where you start to look at him as somebody either at the end of his prime or maybe starting to expect that career decline to begin if we haven't started to see it already. And you start to wonder what type of hitter he's going to mature into as he gets into his mid-30s and into the latter years of his career. He put up some very good numbers last year. You saw some spots where he wasn't quite the same hitter as before, but still one of the most dangerous hitters in the league. I think what he's got in the bat, I actually expect him to do a little bit more batting average-wise than I do power-wise. But that said, he was able to put up 38 home runs in his age 33 season, which is awfully impressive. We'll see if he can keep that up. But he's still the guy that makes that Tigers offense go.
As you say, the gang's all here still. That was not a given going into the offseason. There was a lot of speculation there could be some big trades coming out of Detroit. That hasn't happened. What do you see as the vision for Al Avila and this Tigers group as they go into spring? What is the vision for not just spring training, but for the season ahead?
Well, this is kind of one last run for these guys, I think, realistically. The situation's been pretty well laid out. They explored avenues where they could get a little bit younger and lower the payroll going forward this past offseason. They couldn't find anything that really made sense for them, so they kept this team together. But you've got a lot of guys who are in the last years of their contracts. and Al Avila has made it clear that he expects this team to get under the luxury tax threshold for 2018, which means that it's going to be awfully hard, if not impossible, to re-sign a lot of these guys. And you look at a guy like J.D. Martinez, you kind of have to suspect that this is probably got a really good chance to be his final season in Detroit. Ian Kinsler and Anibal Sanchez have option years for 2018, but you got to figure that you've got a good chance to be watching their swan songs in the Motor City. And Mike Pelfrey, Mark Lowe, some other guys are going to be coming off the payroll. So, you know, you still have the inner core of this squad together for the long haul. And you're not quite sure about Justin Upton because he's got that opt-out after this coming season. But you can look at this team, win or lose, and think that this team that's currently constructed, it's probably not going to be back together beyond this season. And if they get off to a slow start, you wonder if they'll be together by the trade deadline.
Well, what do you think the perfect season would look like for the Tigers, Beck? What's realistic? We know this club's been, you know, chasing that first title since 1984. Maybe that could happen with the right health. What do you think the perfect season looks like?
The perfect season would be that everybody's healthy and that Verlander and Cabrera keep defying Father Time and that Justin Upton makes the adjustment to the American League and shows some of his old numbers from the National League days and that this team makes the playoffs. It's going to be awfully hard to win a division unless the Indians have a World Series hangover, which is certainly possible. But I think even if they don't get that, this team is good enough, if they stay healthy and if they can get production out of the guys they're counting on, to win a wild card spot. And if you get in there, you've got, you know, your seed in the tournament. And at that point, you hope this team has got the parts and has got enough left after a long season to make a run to try to get to the World Series. I think at this point they'll take their chances at least getting in and see how they match up against whoever else gets into the dance. Because I think you look up and down this roster, there's enough talent to get to the World Series, I think. You have to have a lot of things go right, but the talent's there. And that's more than what you can say for a lot of other teams in the American League.
When you just talk about the opening day roster and the, you know, 7 or 8 week lead up to that, as the Tigers formulate things, what are the key areas of intrigue for you, Beck? You'll be covering this from beginning to end. What, you know, be the key roster battle or even, you know, down the roster, last spot? I mean, what are the areas of interest?
Well, center field's going to be interesting to watch because we really have no idea what's going to happen there. You look at the roster makeup and the desire to get Jacoby Jones a little bit more development time in Toledo to learn some plate discipline. And the signs at least point to a platoon between Mikey Matuk and Tyler Collins. But it's not out of the realm of possibility for Jacoby Jones to make a charge in spring training and force his way onto this club. There are a lot of people in the organization that think he's ready defensively already for the big leagues, which is saying a lot for center field at Comerica Park. If you accept that, then the question is he ready to hit enough? Is he disciplined enough at this point to hit well enough to stick in the big leagues and not be overmatched? That's going to be interesting to watch. I think the back end of the rotation is going to be interesting. Do you count on guys like Boyd and Norris taking those spots and being able to build upon this past season? Do you hold out any hope that Mike Pelfrey and Anibal Sanchez, given strong camps, can make a push to claim rotation spots back? And then last but not least, you know, we still have to see what the bullpen looks like. There's a lot of good young potential there. You know, maybe some guys for whom time might be running out. But there are good young arms there. If they can put things together, you can see the semblance of a logical, effective bullpen coming together for them. But you've got to be able to watch and judge off of spring training outings to be able to make a determination.
Beck, you know, we said it before, but this could have gone a lot of ways this winter. But you look up and the Tigers look much the same as they did at the end of 2016 as far as the complexion of the roster.
I know that was meaningful to the players involved to have another go at this. It was a star-laden group. It's a very talented group. And I'm sure when they get to Lakeland, there'll be just appreciation for the fact that we're all here. We're all back together. We got another shot at this. What do you think that atmosphere will be like in that clubhouse?
Yeah, I mean, if it's anything like what we saw at Tiger Fest in the Winter Caravan, yeah, I would expect that these guys really do appreciate what they have here as far as one more opportunity. I think they want to show that, you know, that this, I guess, potentially last opening of the window of this group to contend for a World Series spot isn't just a matter of not being able to find takers to trade away guys, that there's talent there and that this team can figure it out. There were guys who I don't think they were entirely certain that they were going to be back, who appreciate the fact that they are back and that they do kind of fit on this team right now. And that they're going to have to really earn their way, not just to make a playoff run, but also just to keep this team together around trade deadline time. Because that pressure to go young, get prospects for who you can, is going to be there even during the year if they're not playing up to their capabilities. So there's an awful lot of pressure on these guys right now.
All right, there you have it, the latest from Jason Beck. As I said, we'll check in with him throughout spring training camp in Lakeland, Florida. I want to thank him for joining us. Thank you all for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, Detroit Tigers edition. Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kashevitz, and this is our latest look at the Kansas City Royals. We are going to preview spring training and bring in Jeffrey Flanagan. And spring training begins next week in Surprise, Arizona, for the Kansas City Royals. And Jeffrey, start with difference makers, basically. We're looking at what's the difference between the 2017 Royals and the 2016 Royals. It obviously has been an off season in which there's been some subtracting, some addition.
Yeah.
What do you think is different about this club as we look ahead here?
Well, there's been kind of a growing narrative, and I think you and I have spoken about this the last couple of times too, that the Royals are, you know, changing philosophies to become more of a power team. And, you know, they got rid of Jerod Dyson, their speedy outfielder. And, you know, they picked up Jorge Soler, a power hitter, Brandon Moss, a power hitter. But the truth is that they still are built on speed and defense. And Dayton Moore has pointed that out more than once. You know, they still have Lorenzo Cain and Paulo Orlando and Billy Burns and Terrence Gore and Whit Merrifield and, you know, Hosmer can run. So they're still based on that. They do hope to hit a little bit more power. Last year, Salvador Perez set a, you know, Royals record for home runs. Haas hit a career high. Moose would have probably got a career high had he not been hurt. They looked for Alex Gordon after the broken wrist last year to bounce back, and he might have a career high. So I think they're looking for a little bit more long ball, but they're still going to be a team based on speed and defense. And I think the major changes you're going to see, obviously, are in the rotation. Eddie Volquez has gone to free agency. Of course, we all know about the tragic death of Yordano Ventura. The bullpen is going to be dramatically different from what we've seen over the last few years. You know, you don't have Wade Davis or Greg Holland or Luke Hochever or, you know, Ryan Madsen from a couple of years ago. And, you know, you basically got Kelvin Herrera left from that great shutdown bullpen. And that's probably the one area that's probably going to be the biggest difference. They're going to have to rely on some internal solutions. You know, Matt Strom, if he's not in the rotation, a kid named Josh Tamont. They need Joaquin Story to bounce back. I think probably the biggest difference right there, right in the bullpen.
You know, one of the great things about spring training is sometimes guys step up unexpectedly. Whit Merrifield was a nice, pleasant surprise for the Royals last year in camp. Who might surprise this year?
I would say, you know, the kid I just mentioned, Josh Tamont, would be one. I mean, they've talked so much about him in the offseason. He had a breakthrough year at Double-A last year. Always had the big arm, you know, 101, 102 miles an hour, and, you know, but just couldn't find the strike zone. And last year in the second half, it just clicked for him. And, you know, they're not a team that's afraid to throw a young guy in the bullpen. They did that with Matt Strom last year and have done it in years past. Even you go back as far as Greg Holland and Herrera, those guys came up pretty young. And that's the kid that I think we're going to look at the most this spring.
Jeff, if you had to pick one guy in this roster, we know there's several pending free agents, and I think there's several candidates there among those pending free agents. But who is the star of the Royals at this point, and what is that person's situation going into camp?
Well, that's the big debate. You know, I've talked to several people about that. Is it Danny Duffy, who's emerging as one of the top left-handers in the game, Or is it Eric Hosmer, you know, who's a guy who's got it all? You know, he's tall, good looking, could be, making millions and millions of dollars in marketing somewhere else, has all the talent in the world, but really suffered a horrible slump in the second half last year and still ended up with career highs and with home runs with 25 and RBIs, I think 104 or whatever it was. And I still think he is the star potential on this team. And he needs to bounce back and have a full season of really crushing the ball. He's going to be a free agent after this year if they don't sign him to a long-term deal during the season. So that's the big question mark is, what happens to guys like him and Moose and Lorenzo Cain and Escobar, and you go down the list. But I think he is the star. He is the potential difference maker.
We've talked all winter about the Royals kind of being reloading and at the same time trying to contend, which is a difficult trick to pull off. When you think about the vision for this club, kind of the big picture plan, for this spring training and for this season, how do you put that into words?
Well, I think because they're a small market team, the roster is always going to be fluctuating. It's always going to be fluid. There's going to be guys coming and going, and then there's been a lot made of, have the Royals change their philosophy. But really, it's when Dayton started building his team all the way back to 2006, the first thing he had in mind was how do you defend Kauffman Stadium, one of the biggest parks in baseball, and you do it with speed and defense. And, they've added some power with Soler and Brandon Moss, but there's still a team that at its core is built on speed and defense. They've still got Lorenzo Cain and Paul Orlando and Whit Merrifield and, backup outfielders Billy Burns and Terrence Gore. So there's plenty of speed still left on this team. I think that's still at its core. But, Dayton's mentioned several times this offseason that, he wants a team that hits more home runs. He's tired of trying to hang on to one-run leads late in the game, which they've done for the last 3 years. He would like to have a 3- or 4-run lead. So that bullpen, which is going to be a lot different this year, has a little bit more cushion. So I think, big picture-wise, I think you're going to probably see some more home runs out of this team than you've seen in recent years when they've always been last in the league in home runs. They still may be last, but I think you're going to see a little bit more pop.
Well, the Royals will be fascinating because, we know, especially with the CBA changes, it changes the value of holding on to your pending free agents through the season, as far as extending qualifying offers and recouping draft picks should they leave and that sort of thing. So the trade deadline could be interesting for this club just with so many pending free agents if they're not in contention. But obviously, they aim to be in contention. If you could put into words, what would the perfect season look like for the Kansas City Royals in 2017?
Well, first of all, like you mentioned, the trade deadline, they're going to have to be in contention at the trade deadline, or there's going to be a great temptation to, start, trading some of those guys who are going to be free agents after 2017. I'm talking Mike Moustakas and Hosmer, Lorenzo Cain, Escobar, you just go down the list. Dayton's never been a guy the last 4 years who's anxious to break up the team. So I think that's going to be the most curious part of the season. And if it holds true, if they're still in contention for a wild card spot or anything, the perfect season is they take off again in the second half like they did in 14 and 15, storm into the playoffs and make one last gallant run with this core group that, we talk a lot about the window closing, and it probably will close to a degree after 17, but they fully believe that they can make one final run toward another championship.
Jeffrey, who are the guys who, the fate of this club is directly tied to the performance of X? Who are the guys who answer that question?
Well, I think you have to have bounce-back years from Alex Gordon. And I think the wrist bothered him a lot more last year than he let on. You've got to have a bounce-back year from Joaquin Soria, who, with times wasn't bad, and Royals fans won't want to hear that, but he was okay at times, but just awful at other times. Chris Young, right in the same group, he has to bounce back, especially now with the absence of Yordano Ventura and Volquez. He needs to step up and be a factor in the rotation. They certainly could use Whit Merrifield stepping up and being an everyday guy at second base with his speed and his ability to do a lot of things offensively. You can go around the list, Hosmer, can Moose bounce back from his ACL surgery? There's a lot of question marks, but all those guys are going to have to step up if this team's going to compete.
Last thing, Jeffrey, you mentioned the tragic passing of Yordano Ventura. I'd have to imagine for the Royals,
There'll be a special meaning to just congregating and that report date in Surprise, Arizona. It's probably going to have great value to this club just to be together.
Yeah, it sure will. And we saw a little bit of it at FanFest, a little while ago. We had about, I think, 20 or 22 guys were there, at spring training. Of course, you'll get all 40 plus, a lot of other guys too. And it's going to help, I think. We've seen some signs of healing already. But it's going to really help for all of them to be in spring training. It's obviously it's a time of optimism. They've talked a lot about healing and remembering. Just don't forget about Yordano, and I don't think they ever will. There'll be a patch with number 30 on all their uniforms this year, and there'll be a lot more tributes to come. But there's definitely a need for healing here, and we'll start to see that in spring training.
All right, there you have it, the latest from Jeffrey Flanagan. We'll continue to check in with him throughout spring training this year and all throughout the 2017 season. I want to thank him for joining us. Thank you all for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, Kansas City Royals edition. Hey, everybody, thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and this is our latest look at the Minnesota Twins. I'm joined by Rhett Bollinger, and we are going to preview spring training camp in Fort Myers, Florida. The Twins report next week. Rhett will be down there, and Rhett, just kind of look at this club, the difference between 2016 and 2017. What would you identify as the key differences in the Twins?
Well, the Twins haven't done too much in terms of free agency, in terms of adding any differences this offseason outside of adding catcher Jason Castro. It should be a big addition to this team, especially on the pitching side. Great working with staff. We know he's great with pitch framing. Last year, he was in the top four in baseball in that statistic, turning strikes into balls into strikes, turning balls into strikes, getting extra strikes for his pitchers. Does a great job of that. Should help the staff a lot. Last year, Chris Suzuki was not one of his strengths. Was not pitch framing the way that Castro does. He's going to be the big addition. Also, a former All Star in 2013, he can offer something offensively as well. He doesn't hit lefties as well. Like I said before, I think he's going to probably be tuned a little bit. We'll mostly only face right-handed pitching. But he's going to be a big part of this team going forward in terms of helping the pitching staff get better. We know last year the Twins had the worst ERA in baseball from their starting pitchers. That needs to change. And I think Castro, with his game-planning skills, defensive skills, even throwing runners out on top of the stats he has in terms of pitch framing, should definitely help this team out going forward.
Now, sometimes we think we know everything about a ball club on paper, or it all seems pretty straightforward, but then spring training comes along and some surprise development happens, and sometimes it's a pleasant surprise as far as a guy stepping up who maybe makes the roster unexpectedly or steps into a bigger role than he was initially pegged to have. Any guys strike you as potential to surprise here in spring training?
With the Twins' decision to designate Byung-Ho Park for assignment, the door is open for Kenny's Vargas as a prize for the Twins as a designated hitter in 2017. Vargas had a crowded infield situation last year and didn't get much playing time, but in the 50 games, he certainly was productive, hitting .233 with a .500 slugging percentage, hitting 10 home runs. Vargas showed some powerful signs in terms of his exit velocity and stat cast and could be primed for a breakout year with the Twins now that Trevor Plouffe has been outrighted off the roster, Byung-Ho Park has also been designated for assignment, and Miguel Sano is going to be at third base, giving Vargas a chance to be the club's everyday designated hitter.
One thing we're looking at on MLB.com this week is every club's star, and that star is situation going into 2017. And I don't think it's too hard to identify the Twins star, and he's obviously an intriguing situation because it's the name we talked about all winter.
Absolutely, yeah. Brian Dozier's definitely evolved into the Twins' biggest star. We know Joe Mauer has been kind of the face of this franchise for a long time as well. Both those kind of struggles the last few years and the emergence of Dozier. Dozier's kind of become the face of this team, but he's had an interesting offseason, like we talked about a lot, being subject to trade rumors the entire offseason, linked with the Dodgers throughout most of it. Obviously, it did not happen. The Dodgers decided to trade for Logan Forsythe instead. Dozier's still with the Twins. He wasn't exactly, thrilled with the way some of the offseason went. I think he wanted to stay with the Twins, and I think it dragged on a little longer than he would prefer. But at the same time, I think he's happy to be in Minnesota. He still has two more years left on his deal, so he can continue to contribute for the Twins. The big thing he said to me was he doesn't really want to be, I guess, a ping pong ball is the way you put it. He doesn't want to be, every time, trade deadline shows up, he doesn't want to be that guy that could be kind of always talked about in trade rumors going forward. But I do think that even if he doesn't want that, I do think that it's probably going to continue to happen just because he does have so much value. And the Twins need to kind of look, a little bit longer view. more of a long-term thing and look for pitching. So I still think Dozier could be a guy that could trade, you know, going forward at some point. But for now, he's still with the Twins. I think he's definitely happy to be in Minnesota, but certainly could be a trade candidate still in the next 2 years.
Well, what element that made the Dozier discussion so fascinating this winter was it is a new front office, and it was a pretty big decision to make right off the gate is to decide whether to part with the franchise traits and where to take this club going in the future. What would you say, Rhett, is the vision for this club on the part of Derek Falvey and Thad Levine when they look ahead to not just spring training of 2017, but 2017 in general?
Well, the big thing they want to do is kind of build a consistent winner. But to do that, they have to kind of find a way to develop some pitching here. We know they have a veteran rotation in some ways with guys that have been around like Irvin Santana, Hector Santiago, Phil Hughes coming off an injury, Kyle Gibson. But those guys need to step up for sure this year. But going forward, too, it's just building that rotation in terms of guys like Jose Berríos, you know, a bunch of guys behind him in the minor leagues, whether it's Cole Stewart or Tyler Jay or Steven Gonsalves or Fernando Romero. There's enough arms in the system that hopefully some of these guys can come up and be impact starting pitchers. And on the offensive side, I think they kind of want to build a team around some speed, some athleticism, and obviously power, too. Last year, this team hit more than 200 home runs. They kind of have Dozier and Sano. It's kind of their power hitters on this team. Hopefully, they're hoping Park or maybe Vargas will kind of be a power hitter as well. But they like the speed, athleticism of players like, you know, Byron Buxton, Eddie Rosario, Jorge Polanco, Max Kepler. Those are kind of the guys they're going to build around going forward. So I think right now, the key this season is to kind of get their team last year is pretty similar to this year outside of Jason Castro. The big thing this year is going to kind of get these guys to get better, to develop, to try to become winning players going forward. And then I think what they'll do in the future is once they kind of have this core established, then they can kind of fill in the blanks in free agency or via trade to kind of find the positions they need to find. But for now, it's just kind of getting these young guys going and kind of building around this young core over the next few years and hoping to build a winner from that.
The Twins have lost 92 games or more in five of the last six seasons. We know they won't be counted on as a World Series contender in 2017. But in your mind, Rhett, what would the perfect season, the realistically perfect season, look like for this club for 2017?
I think more than anything for a perfect season for the Twins, a lot of it's going to be about development. Like I said, I think a lot of it's going to be Byron Buxton having a breakout year, Miguel Sano bouncing back, Max Kepler building on his year, Eddie Rosario as well, Jorge Polanco being able to stick at shortstop. You know, Jose Berríos maybe taking that next step as a starting pitcher. Some of the young relievers, JT Chagois, Nick Birdie making a step forward, Ryan Pressly maybe becoming a closer. I think record-wise, the Twins, I think, would love to get close to 500 again, like they were 2 years ago. Maybe kind of be, you know, in a competitive race on the stretch. But, you know, I think, you know, ultimately 103 losses to go from that to a playoff team is certainly a pretty big jump. So I think as long as they can kind of even be in the 500 range, they'd be happy. But more than anything, more so than the record, I think it's just about getting kind of that core and everybody to take a step forward so that they can compete going forward. Because I think this year, so they'd love to compete, but realistically, it's just hard to go from that many losses to being a playoff team. But I think if they can kind of get back on that right track to being a playoff team, maybe even, you know, as soon as 2018, and all the right things happen in terms of all the prospects and young guys, you know, have big years, I think that's kind of the perfect year for the Twins in 2017.
When you look ahead to spring training, Rhett, what are some of the key areas of intrigue from the roster perspective? You know, where are the key battles going to be here in spring training?
Well, one of the big key battles will be in the rotation, kind of that fifth spot. We know it's on the veterans up front with, you know, Irvin Santana and Kyle Gibson, Hector Santiago and Phil Hughes, if he can come back healthy. But that fifth spot's going to be up for grabs. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, Trevor May has got a good chance at that, but Jose Berríos has got to prove himself as well. We've got Justin Haley, who's a Rule 5 candidate. He'll be in that mix. Veteran Ryan Vogelfong will be in that mix as well. Probably more likely to be in long relief, but at least to get a chance. And I think the bullpen, too, the back of the bullpen, I think the big thing is going to be seeing how, you know, Glenn Perkins responds. Is he going to be able to be the team's closer coming off labrum surgery? Is he going to be kind of eased back into this, you know, role, or is he even going to come back at all? So Brandon Kinsler is kind of the main candidate to be closer after his success last year, but Ryan Pressly's got a good chance, too, to maybe close at some point as well this season. In terms of positionally, at DH is kind of the competition between Byung-Ho Park and Kenny Vargas. Outside of that, most of the spots are mostly filled. I think left field, Eddie Rosario will have a little bit of a battle with Robbie Grossman, maybe a couple non-roster guys like J.B. Shuck for some playing time in left. But for the most part, a lot of positions are kind of already locked up, but guys like Miguel Sano has to establish himself at third. You know, Jorge Polanco has got to do a better job defensively at short. still have Eduardo Escobar to kind of push him as well. But most of the big battles for the Twins this year will be in the, on the pitching side.
Rhett, for those who haven't been down to Fort Myers to see their beloved Twins or maybe going for the first time, how do you just describe the environment down there, the stadium, which has been recently renovated? What's the atmosphere there in Fort Myers?
It's really great. I love going down to Fort Myers. It's really a beautiful city. It has a great beach down there as well. Fort Myers Beach is great, and Sanibel Island's right down there as well. And on the baseball side, it doesn't get any better than Hammond Stadium. The whole CenturyLink Sports Complex is incredible. Renovated over the last couple of years. The ballpark is, you know, all renovated, brand new seats, awesome berm seating out in left field, great views from anywhere you sit in the stadium. Just a beautiful complex. And the great thing about the Twins, too, is they're very open in terms of allowing fans to be able to walk throughout the entire complex. You know, if you go over to the Red Sox side, it is great, too. The Red Sox play in town as well in Fort Myers on the same street on Daniels. Easy to get to their park, too, to see them play. And when they play the Twins, it's always a big crowd with both those teams in the city. But nice thing is, too, compared to the Red Sox, is the Twins, their facility is pretty much wide open. Fans can walk around, get autographs, and especially when the team's kind of practicing early in the morning. The best time to go is, truthfully, to meet the players is probably before the games even start. You can kind of go early and watch them work out and get a bunch of autographs afterward. But the great thing about the Twins is there's so much access for the fans. And so the complex is beautiful. The city's a lot of fun. A lot of good restaurants as well. Fort Myers is a great place for any Twins fan, really any baseball fan or any fan at all, to come down and visit.
All right, there you have it. The latest from Rhett Bollinger. We'll continue to check with him throughout spring training, throughout the 2017 season. I want to thank him for joining us. Thank you all for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, Minnesota Twins edition.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go every night on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.